I think there's a scarcity of bravery in the world today. And I think that that's a sad thing. And I don't know if people necessarily know that they can unlock the bravery within them. A lot of people often say that fear is the opposite of bravery, but information is the opposite of fear. So we really only fear the things we don't know. So
it can be really debilitating. There's no way you're going to get the best out of your staff if you're not listening to the ideas or creating the space to say, hey, do you think this is a good idea still? How would you do it? Or what can we add? Or what can we take away? And
too many people think that jumping into business is a leap of faith, but you can jump into business with your eyes wide open. You can go and inform yourself with all of the right things. You can go and meet people that have maybe done it before. You can really, and that's our greatest resource, is each other.
Before we start this podcast, will you please like, follow, and subscribe to The Right Place Podcast right here on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Rudolf and I would also love to connect with you on LinkedIn, so look us up there too. Thank you. Cheers. Welcome to The Right Place. Meet Brett Lindsay, aka The Digital Philosopher. As the CEO of Big Brave Holdings, he merges design thinking, agile workflows, Kaizen, Ikigai, to help businesses and individuals navigate change. He's a dynamic thinker, strategist, and entrepreneur known for his bold approach to innovation and leadership. He has a new talk called Bravery by Design, which aims to help people overcome fear and move forward. His company is called Big Brave, and they specialize in strategic consulting, design sprints, brand development, helping businesses accelerate decision-making and growth. He's a former radio and television personality, and he blends entertainment and insight, making complex ideas accessible. This episode of the Right Place podcast is for any professional or business owner who needs a boost of bravery to jump into new opportunities and find their way to their right place in 2025. I'm really excited to talk to you today, Brett. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, John. That was a brilliant intro. I don't think I can add more to that. So should I go?
No, it's okay. Let's keep talking, please. No,
we're in the right place. All right, good. No, it's excellent. That's quite a sum up. It's always interesting when people introduce you. Like, we don't often have that in our life, right? When you have a bit of a, hey, this guy, and this is intro. Like, normally it's like, oh, here's Brett. He does some stuff. And like these intros are super important. Like, we talk about networking, but like how you introduce someone really does set the context for how you're going to interact with the person you've just met. And yeah, thanks. That was a really good intro.
No, excellent. I'm often just introduced as a CA, but I mean, I don't even consider myself a CA anymore. I've got the qualification and everything, but that's the least interesting thing about me and the thing that I don't really want to advertise. I want to advertise myself as a connector of people and ideas. So yeah, I agree with you. Intros are very
important. I hear you hit a golf ball really fast, so I'm keen to see that one day.
Yeah, one day, yeah. There's some great courses here in Cape Town. I'll take you on and anyone else. Eh?
Bring it. Let's go.
So, Brett, there's this great quote that often pops up on LinkedIn. It's kind of like two little squares. The one says, I want to do it. The other one says, I'm scared. And then the next block says, do it scared. A brave person is one who acts despite fear. You can be scared, but you end up doing it anyway. There's that famous line, that little video kind of Peter Steyn-Vertooy talking in the semifinal of the last Rugby World Cup, when he says everyone is scared. He doesn't say it in exactly that language, but this is a family show. Tell me about being brave, the origin of being brave, and how it impacts your life as well.
Well, so I started my company and I immediately called it Big Brave. I think the idea of a name really does create a challenge for you. So I always thought I was going to step out. I had some brave ideas, some big ideas. And in order to chase the big ideas, you have to be brave enough to, if you're going to go chase them. So this idea of bravery has sort of stuck around with me. I think looking back through my history of bravery, my family motto is endure fort, which in Latin is translated to mean to suffer bravely or to endure forward. And I think that's the idea, is that you have to endure things. Sometimes it's not always going to be easy going. Sometimes you have to be a bit brave to take the step and take the next step and take the next step. And I think that was sort of like from our sort of family heritage into just living life and going to schools and stuff. And my last school was St. Peter's College, and their motto was In Futurum Portia, which is bravely into the future. And I think this idea of bravery was sort of woven into my life the whole way through, whether I was paying 100% attention to it or not. It was certainly there as this nugget that stayed there. And I think bravery is super important. I do think, and I say this in my talk, I think there's a scarcity of bravery in the world today. And I think that that's a sad thing. And I don't know if people necessarily know that they can unlock the bravery within them. A lot of people often say that fear is the opposite of bravery, but information is the opposite of fear. So we really only fear the things we don't know. So part of bravery is becoming informed. And I think that's what we try to do at Big Brave, is we inform our clients on what you could be doing, where you are now, what you could be doing, where you could be going, and how best to get there. And I think just by informing them, they immediately take a much more of a braver stance because of the knowledge that they have within them.
No, I love that. I love the connection. No, perfect. I love the connection between information and bravery. Too often we're even too scared to go and get more information. I mean, that's the scary part, just getting a bit more information on something, because we're trying to avoid the work, we're trying to avoid the situation that we might end up in. Now, your talk is called Bravery by Design. Really cool title for a talk, very, very attractive. Who's this talk aimed at? And tell me a bit about putting that talk together.
So I like the idea of being able to meet anybody. I like the idea of inspiring people. I think we are too ready to do the work. We're too ready to implement. And I think there are a few of us that are on the planet that our mandate might just be to inspire a few people around us. And those people are inspired and motivated to then bring teams and do that and get the implementation done with this level of motivation and inspiration behind them. I do feel that top leadership need to hear stories of bravery. I think management and team leaders need to hear this idea of bravery. I really do feel as well that team members, there's a lot of uncertainty. The ego plays both a pivotal role in driving your growth, but also holding you back. Sometimes we have imposter syndrome and we think, I can't possibly add value to this team, or why am I even here? And that's also self-doubt and a lack of bravery going into the space. I really do feel that anybody that feels that they don't have the bravery they need, the first port of call is to just lean into some level of curiosity. So if you'd like to know more about how to be brave, like, that's the sort of market or the audience that I'm hoping to meet, and just inspire them at the very least to be a little bit more curious.
No, I love that connection again between the curiosity and the brave. I mean, to find more information about something, you need to be curious. To find more information about yourself, to push yourself in a new direction, you need to be a little bit curious. Okay, what if I do this? What if I do that? Or can I speak to this person? Or can I step up and own this new role? Or be a little bit more brave in this relationship with the client? All of that, I think, pushes you a little bit forward and out of your comfort zone. But that's where the magic happens.
Absolutely. The questions, I mean, I call myself a digital philosopher, inquisition and questioning things is really important. And I think that's becoming a philosopher, a titled philosopher, came about from me just being innately curious. And I was like, well, I need to do something. I can't just say, well, I'm super curious. And the idea of being a philosopher, I found that some people ask questions in the hopes of finding answers. Philosophers ask questions in the hopes of finding understanding. When you have understanding, the answers come. But the answers are so much more grounded or have a firmer foundation when there is a level of understanding underneath them. And you can say, well, that's great. And you can build on top of that, which is great. So curiosity is one part of it. And you get to ask the question, what? If you're not sure of something, well, what is that? What is that? Why? And then why is that? And the next part of that goes into being curious, being creative. So you go from curiosity into creativity. And if you can creatively attack your problems, you can start asking, well, what if? What if I actually overcome this problem? What if I actually, so I've identified the problem, but what if I could actually overcome this? What would that mean to me? And that's another step in bravery. It's just saying this idea of like, well, I'm stuck in the challenge. I'm stuck in the fear. Now I know what it is. And now what if I could overcome it? Oh, wow. And immediately, without really having to put a lot of cognitive bandwidth or even physical effort into it, you've kind of taught your brain to have more of a growth mindset, this idea of thinking past the problem and creating new opportunities for your future. So creativity would be the big thing there.
No, excellent. And how does adopting this philosophical approach to business give you an edge in today's fast-moving world?
I wish more people would identify themselves as philosophers. I really do. I think that we've got this modern sort of perception of philosophy being set in the old days. And it's like the Aristotle and the Plato and the Socrates, and that's great. because they were the fathers of philosophy. I mean, you look at even religious figures like Jesus and even Mahatma Gandhi and some of the philosophies that they had. There are philosophies that have traveled throughout centuries, and there are even modern, Jordan B. Peterson is a great philosopher of today. And there's so many, but I think we don't give ourselves the license to ask better questions. And I think when you ask better questions, you find better answers. And by finding better answers, I'm hoping that as society, we can start to do better things. So I really do feel that more people should have more of an inquiring mind. The idea of philosophy requires you to really learn and leverage the knowledge of the past so that you can apply it today and even forecast what the future could be. And I think it's really useful as a tool to have this philosophical outlook in life.
No, wonderful, Brett. And I agree with that. And the philosophy of the Right Place podcast is that your right place is at the intersection of your roles, relationships, and environments. And I want to dive into each one of those elements and unpack
Perfect.
It. From a bravery point of view and big brave, and also look at your career as well. So if we start with roles, you encourage people to jump into opportunities. Can you share maybe a defining moment where you took your own advice and jumped into something with no idea what was going to happen? And how did it shape your career?
I think any business partners or team members that I've worked with will know that I probably do this daily where I'm jumping into things. And the idea is trying to mitigate the risk of the jump. It's so much more fun. I've become desensitized to it, I think. I've kind of programmed myself over like more than a decade of doing this now where I am the jump guy. If you say, hey, I've got this cool idea and I'm thinking about jumping in, I'm like, go for it. That'll be great. You have to do that. The mindset is what changes when you consider risk or you consider what is brave. And the more you do things that you look back and be like, that was really, really risky, but you did it and you overcame it. So you kind of wear that as your plate of armor and you go into the next thing. Well, if I can survive that, I can do the next thing. And if I can survive that, I can do the next thing. And that's sort of like compound bravery, if you think about it. Mm. So this idea of bravery and these ideas of jumping is great. It needs to be a logical next step. And I think that's why I've said bravery by design. It needs to be a logical next step, not a leap of faith. Too many people think that jumping into business is a leap of faith, but you can jump into business with your eyes wide open. You can go and inform yourself with all of the right things. You can go and meet people that have maybe done it before. You can really, and that's our greatest resource is each other. I mean, if you aren't out there networking, connecting with people that have maybe done something that you can learn from, then you're really not the jump kind of person. And then the world does seem kind of scary. So the idea then is that collaboration and togetherness. I mean, I'm always more scared when I'm alone doing something. So I like to drag people into it. It's more fun to like encourage people like, hey, come on this journey with me. It's kind of like when you're scared of the dark when you're a kid. I'm not as scared when daddy walks in the room. The lights might not have turned on, but I'm just a little bit braver because dad's there. And I see that with my daughter. And I see that as well when I do consulting with clients. Like there's this element of confidence going to it's like, that's nothing. We'll move on. It's fine. All we got to do is step 1, 2, 3, 4. And because there's a level of structured guidance, the fear of the unknown disappears because we're focused on what matters. We focus on the things in front of us. And like I said, jumping in, it's a big term when you haven't really thought about it, but it really does turn into a logical next step, not a leap of faith. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I also want you to think fly, not fall when you jump. Like think fly, not fall.
No, excellent, Brett. And also sometimes, I mean, the more you do this, the less information sometimes you need to jump. You've ticked a couple of boxes and like, okay, well, we've got enough information. We've got 60% of the information. That's enough for us to take a chance on this. Waiting to get 100% of the information, you can miss the moment, you can miss the opportunity. And then you're almost back at square one and be like, oh, flip, man. Oh, we should have done this. In hindsight, we should have done this. But just taking the chance, I think that's where the curiosity happens. And you just activate a lot of energy and your spider senses are awake. And you dive in and you figure it out as you go along. Like you're assembling the parachute after flying through there.
Yeah. So on that, I like to think about jetpacks, not parachutes. Parachutes still just slow you down your descent. Jetpack will get you rising. So think jetpack, not parachutes. And I'm often heard around the office saying, jetpacks for everyone. Come on, put your jetpack on. Let's go. And yes, I've done it a lot. And yes, I've kind of trained myself to be reactive to opportunities based on what I've experienced in the past and what I feel we could do. And a couple of years ago, I would have agreed with you 100% on, yes, it's like my spidey sense. It's my intuition and I could just jump straight in. But I've learned that the stop, wait, think some more, design it a little bit, test it, then go. That part really saves you a lot of pain and hurt later. And to be honest, I think that's a lot of the thing that we're scared of is the, if I do this, will it work? If I do this and it doesn't work, will it hurt me? And intuition can kind of rush you into a headache. It can really, like, it's really good to be intuitive and to have that because you've done it a few times. But the design thinking side of me, and this is why I like this Bravery by Design and the philosophy and the design thinking side of it really does allow you to stop. And then you focus on three main things. What is desirable? What is feasible? What is viable? Does somebody want it? Do you want it? We don't even ask ourselves that question. Yes, this is something somebody else wants, but do I even want to be part of this? And then feasible. Is it even possible? Can we even do it? Because these are stopping points for you. Like, ask these three questions. Is it desirable? Is it feasible? And then is it viable? Does the value outweigh the cost? And by the time you've stopped and you've just asked those three questions, your intuition might still be there, but you've just been a little bit more rigorous with your inquisition. And you've probably got yourself to a better position to start than just boldly and blindly running into it. So I don't think bravery is blind. I will preface that. I don't think bravery is blind. I think too many people think brave people run into things. But I think truly brave people just inform themselves to a level that it is perceived as bravery from the outside world.
And now, Brett, when you're having these conversations, these brave conversations in your boardroom or with your team, and you're asking people to put their jetpacks on, are people expecting you then to be the bravest person in the room? Or do you sometimes have to lean into someone else's bravery or just encourage them? Because if they're brave, you can kind of go along with them.
I can tell you right now that I'm not the bravest person you've ever met. I'm still probably one of the most curious people you've ever met. And I think that that skill set really does help the perception of bravery. And this is the society we've lived in, right? We've got these avatars in social media. We've got this outward persona of how we want to appear. A certain amount of vulnerability helps people to understand where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, and where as a team we can collaborate more effectively. I don't want to go out there parading to say, listen, I can do this really well when actually I can't. And then everybody relies on me to do something and I can't actually deliver. I'd rather say, this is where I'm really brave here because my skill set allows me to be in this direction. And I am quite happy at the same time to just be like, listen, I'm not scared, but I have a delay in my intuition on that space because maybe I don't know it as much, I haven't done as much, my experience is limited, and I'm happy to lean into the knowledge and experience of other people, and I think that's really quite key. But I've had to learn that, and I think this is what I do in these sessions is I let people understand that the idea of bravery is something that we kind of share. Nobody sits in a chair and says, oh, I'm very brave. Nobody, like, I can't tell you how brave I am. You might tell a better story of how brave I was through an anecdote or something that you saw me do. Like, vice versa, we don't actually speak about our own bravery to people. Other people tell the stories of our bravery, but they only do that when there's value and impact on the other side of the action.
And now, Brett, if we think back to or think to the clients and the people that we're doing these brave things for, how do we bring them on board? How do you convince a client, hey, trust us, we've done a bit of the homework, this hasn't been done before, but we've got a good feeling. Or we've got a good roadmap ahead. How do you carry that forward to the client and get them on board as well?
So a friend of mine many, many years ago said to me, if you have to spend more than 5 minutes convincing someone that what you do is valuable, then you're probably not the right, it's not the right fit. And I get that. If your knee's sore, you don't go see a brain surgeon. And no matter how much that brain surgeon tells you how great they are at their job, you're not touching my knee, bud. And you know what I mean? It's like, so I think I take it with a certain amount of care as well. I also don't want to – the ethical side of it is also comes from the philosophy of the business. It's kind of like, why are we doing this? When this is done and the success is had, what is your expectation in the future? And it's a lot of it is behavior change, psychological safety, and really just the inquisition of the mind. As much as I've called myself a digital philosopher over the years, I found that more and more interactions – it really is human. So we might solve human problems with digital solutions, but we do it in a meaningful way where we interact with the human problem, not the digital or the business problem. And I think that starts to change the way people think about it. It's not a silver bullet. It's not an antidote. It's this idea of, and you got to be careful how you wield it, right? If people are coming into a space and they're expecting miracles and they're like, just take this pill and you will be brave. That's not how it works. It really is this coaching space. So we don't generally convince people. The sales pattern isn't so much do this and we'll solve all your problems. The sales pitch is sort of, we actually just do what we do in the workshops or the facilitated sessions. We do that in meeting one. And we work with them and we're quite inquisitive straight away. Well, and our tagline at Big Brave is, what would you like to do? Not what do you need to do or have to do? What would you like to do? It actually starts getting talking about visions and dreams of the future. And that changes the conversation quite naturally. I like to think that most of our clients sign on with us because of a relationship that we nurture quite early. And from that relationship, we're able to generate trust. And from that trust, the business can proceed.
No, excellent, Brett. And now in terms of the curiosity, you're also a big fan of collaboration. Is there a relationship that you built out of curiosity that has been a game changer for Big Brave and the projects that you take on?
Sure. All of them. Absolutely all of them. The collaborations, if anybody is out there thinking that they can do everything by themselves, I'm going to tell you right now, you are categorically wrong. Even Elon Musk knows that he has to delegate to people. I mean, maybe he's not the right topic of conversation, but given his business acumen and what he's done, this is says, but any leader that you look at, they are standing on top of the success of teams, of legacy, of their predecessors. This idea that anybody has ever done something by themselves, I can't get on board with. So curiosity, yes, find out what the thing is. Creativity, find out what if we overcame it? What if we could do this? And then collaboration would be the what if we. And I think that becomes a very inclusive conversation. That question, what if, hey, John, what if we were able to do this? So this is that thing I identified. This is what I've thought about in my own time. But, you know, then the sum isn't 2 + 2 = 5. 2 + 2 = E. It becomes exponential because all of a sudden we can build on it. Then you bring someone else to the conversation. I bring someone else to the conversation. And as long as you've got a certain amount of vulnerability in the spaces that you're weak, you can delay some ego. Then collaboration really does start to play. And if you ask me one thing that I'm scared of, besides the irrational fear of bats, which a lot of my friends will know about, but ego is terrifying. I believe that ego is what enters the room when all logic and intellect leaves the room. Like, if you start parading around that you know everything and you can do everything and why do I need you, that ego is not a useful thing to have around a collaborative environment. So dealing with egos quite early is a thing that we work on. And there's a lot of design thinking and agile methodologies that we've adopted that help to democratize decision making, that help to create and cultivate inclusivity. And every single time we've done that, I've been so impressed with the level of input we get from what may have been perceived as the lesser person in the room. And you hear about these hippos, these highest paid people in the organization. Just because you get a massive salary doesn't mean you have all of the knowledge. So you've hired these great people. Let's leverage them as a wonderful resource that they are.
Yeah, wonderful. I actually wanted to park there a little bit and say, I think I've worked at companies where there isn't that culture. There's no collaboration. It's the boss's way or the highway. It's, we did it this way last year. We're going to keep doing it this way this year, and it can be really debilitating. There's no way you're going to get the best out of your staff if you're not listening to the ideas or creating a space to say, hey, do you think this is a good idea still? How would you do it? Or what can we add? Or what can we take away? And bosses that almost steamroll their ideas through the boardroom and through the workshops and everything, I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice. And then you've got a team of executors and not a team of thinkers and collaborators and people that are driven by their curiosity. And just giving them a little bit of leeway to kind of explore, how could we do this better? And you never know what's going to come out of that. It might not be something that you'll implement immediately, but it might just start off a chain reaction that can turn your product or your service around.
That's so right as well. And I think when everybody in the organization feels that they are somehow included, their self-perception of value, the value that I bring to this business, it's got worth. Like, people know, like, I could be the sweeper of the corridors in this massive office, but they really wanted to hear my outlook on maybe the layout of the office that keeps it cleaner, that helps for people to move, that helps with flow. Maybe they're the best person to ask, but if we keep this hierarchical approach to business, we maybe will lose some of the best nuggets of information or knowledge that we have in our organization. And I think the idea of just tapping into, before we start looking everywhere else for the opportunities and think we have to be so brave looking everywhere else, we don't have to go and shoot for the moon. we can just look in our backyard. We can look in our team. We can look in a different department and say, hey, guys, this is what we do. What do you think? And just opening up that line of like, hey, curiosity, what do you think? I'm curious to see what you think. Having that will just spark a huge opportunity of creative collaboration.
Now, Brett, Big Brave helps businesses design their future. How do you approach connecting with new people and building in partnerships with them to ensure your alignment of your vision? And what would they like to do?
Would love to be more operational in Big Brave these days. I've become less operational. My team are doing a great job in terms of running the workshops that we do. I sometimes get called in, maybe it's somebody I know that's wanting to do something and I get involved. But the idea then is to make sure that we can help people. If we can't help people, we're not going to say that we can. If we can't help you, that's cool. Some people also don't want to change. So they're brave enough to walk through the door. You have to be willing to do some stuff. You have to be willing to go and make the change. I like to help people that are already happy to help themselves. They understand that there's a little bit of effort to require to get the impact they're after. And it isn't always the case. And I've kind of really exercised my meeting muscle. You know, I've had so many meetings with so many different people. And I think you have as well, John. Like, you sit in these meetings, we facilitate workshops, we do strategic workshops, and we do design sprints, and these take a week or two at a time. I know what a meeting feels like. I have expectations of what I think a perfect meeting is. I know how the engagement should go. I know where the value exchange should go. I know what I'm hoping to bring and be able to deliver to the people on the other side. And I've got an expectation of what I think they're wanting from me. If there's a misalignment straight away, you can talk about it. And you can, I use that to sort of just do some of the talk, to be honest, and inspire them. At least if we can't work with you, we may leave you inspired. But the idea then is that there has to be some level of alignment at a fundamental vision level, where you at least have this vision of, I'm going to start making changes and choices in my business that will allow change to happen. I'm going to start making these choices to happen. And the difficulty sometimes comes in when we have a curious person in mid-level management comes to meet us, and they go, oh, these guys are great. Love this meeting. Want to go tell the exco. So we've gotten pretty good at giving them like takeaways. And I think that really, really helps as well. You're the best salesperson in your organization as an entrepreneur or a founder. Like, you could probably sell this better than anybody you employ or anybody else that has heard the presentation once. But if you have some sort of leave behind, at least the information isn't getting diluted when it hits the ears of the C-level, the decision makers in an organization. So that extra, have that moment, that meeting, but then have something that they can take away that still delivers the message in a way and quality that you're after, that you're happy with. And we call that making sure that the experience continues past the point of engagement. So there is that point of engagement, that experience needs to continue. I hope that helps.
Yeah, I think that's very important, because if you can't convey that properly, then there's uncertainty. And business owners, yeah, and the powers that be, they don't deal well with uncertainty. It needs to be a sure thing or a sure direction. Otherwise, they're not going to jump on board or commit resources to it.
Because uncertainty is scary. Uncertainty is scary.
100%. And Brett, on your as part of the Big Brave offering, you do strategy sprints, design sprints. How do you kickstart that? And is that something that normal companies can actually adopt as part of their processes?
Absolutely. We start those sessions. We used to start with this very cumbersome approach to selling a big solution. And over the years, we've realized that not everybody's ready to just jump like up to here, up to their necks in this decision. That makes it even scarier. When you say, listen, this is a very expensive solution that we have for your problem, and you have to just trust us that we completely understand your problem. You've really delivered the brief perfectly, and you're going to pay us this money. We're going to take this time, and we're going to deliver you exactly what we're solving. That's crazy. Like, that's just crazy talk. You can't actually have this big solution that will just nail it every single time. Like, I wish our business was that good. I really do, but it really isn't. The learnings we have over time is that we can abstract this big solution. We can abstract it into different areas of need where we meet the client where they are. So we meet a client, we say, hey, listen, what would you like to do? And they tell us what they would like to do. What would you like to do in 6 months? What would you like to do in 1 year? What would you like to do in 3 years? What would you like to do in 5 years? And it changes, right? So this is up and to the right curve. Sometimes it's a straight line, sometimes it's a curve, but it's always up and to the right. So you ask these questions in 3 years, in 4 years, what gets you up and to the right? Okay, so if that's where you're heading, what decisions do we make today that actually keep us on that trajectory? And all of a sudden, we start building these logical next steps in for them. So we have a 1-hour initial meeting, and then we'll have these 4 or 5 hours, what we call insights workshops, where we are exercising all of our curiosity. We're not trying to solve the problem. We're trying to understand the problem. And I think that's really the thing. So using that curiosity up front, and then going into the space, once we've understood and defined the problem, now you can start saying, how might we? And it's a big thing in design thinking is asking this question, how might we solve it? So if curiosity and creativity asks, what if, and what if we, then design thinking starts reframing that problem and saying, well, how might we solve it? So what if, not what if we could solve it? Let's say we can. How might we go about doing it? And it changes it. It starts this, the decision starts getting made slowly over time, where you start identifying, you start making some really good choices. And by the time you look back, you're like, wow, we've actually made some decisions. We've actually taken some action. We've actually made some steps. And all of it is leading towards us up and to the right. If you forget your dreams and your visions and your goals, you can't solve anything today. Like, you have to know where you want to be so that you know how to start. And we've broken that down. So we have the 1 hours, we have the 4 or 5 hours, we have the full day dashes. So we used to do sprints, and we said, well, what's quicker than a sprint? A dash. So we do 1 day dashes for design and dev. And sometimes clients just need an artifact and they need it really quickly. So we help them, like, let's understand what you need, and then we'll give you this design dash. And the nice thing is then they have this quality thing that they've walked out with that they didn't have at the beginning of the week. And just by having that extra bit of knowledge from the workshop and having this extra thing that came from the design dash, this cut out, whether it's a slide deck or a pitch deck or a value proposition or financial forecast or whatever it might be, they're immediately more informed, therefore more brave to go into a space and say, that's what we're doing. And so it is, it's a nurturing process. It's a guided journey that we call it. So Big Brave, they're broken up. I call it curiosity and creativity and collaboration. They call it discover, discuss, decide, do. And those are the sort of four main phases of Big Brave. Is we discover what you need, we discuss it together, we decide on what we want to do, and then we do it. You don't just jump straight into the do. And I think that really helps. So there is a bit of a path. There is a journey that you need to go on to become braver, but it is totally possible. It's not as laborious as you might think. And bravery by design. That's why it's called that.
No, it's excellent. I love the four D's there. And I like that it ends up with doing something, because too often we have these sessions, we talk in circles, we pat each other on the back on what has worked, and we just end up saying, okay, well, let's just keep doing this. And like, everyone knows this is like an 80%. We need to be at 100%. We need to get actually better at this. Now we had this whole long session, invested money, people have taken off billable hours, whatever, and we end up in the same place. So to end up with do, like, what are we actually going to change? Yes, some stuff might work, or are we actually going to change, or what are we actually going to implement? That's where the magic happens, because otherwise if you're not moving forward, then you're actually moving backwards.
Well, you're quite right. I think there's a lot that comes into that from that space. Is in order to get it done, you have to start doing something. So if you never start doing it, you'll never get it done. And I think that's the analysis paralysis that happens in big corporates and any business. If you're a self-funded entrepreneur and you're starting your new startup, it's terrifying to know, like, should I spend the 50 Rand there, or should I spend the 50 Rand there, or should I feed myself? And sometimes you just have to feed yourself. Like, when you're desperate, that becomes the best investment you can make, is in yourself. When you're in the C-level suite, your fear is failure. And unfortunately, we've loved this. We've spoken for ages about the fact that we've got this idea to fail. I've heard of some corporates that have actually got a failure budget. If you have a failure budget, is that a good thing? Does that provide an opportunity for you to dare to be different? Does it provide an opportunity for you to just, or does it also invite complacency or recklessness to come in? Like, oh, it doesn't matter. We've got this budget. We can just blow it. And I think we need to see how we do it. And I think from our perspective, what we try to do is create the strategic idea. And it is very much rooted in things like Kaizen, as you mentioned earlier, the Kaizen Japanese philosophy of continuous improvement over time. And if you find this idea of Kaizen, then you really start to challenge the concept of starting by saying, well, starting is better than getting it right. So when we're asking the decision, do we need to be 100% sure? No. Is 80% sure okay? Yes, it is. We'll iterate the other 20%. And this idea of being able to innovate or do anything in a bubble is also a little bit reckless. If you are serving clients, the best thing you could do is get your new offering to a client as soon as possible. Get validated assumptions. So we're making all these assumptions that what we know of our clients and what we think they need is correct. Let's just ask them. Like, build a prototype. Get a little form together. Ask some of your key clients that maybe you've got some safe spaces in. ask some random clients, say, hey, is this something you would like? And if you do like it, how much would you pay for it? It immediately starts to help. When you're a lot more collaborative, not just within the business, but externally to the business as well, the riches of the insights that you gather are incredible. So yeah, getting started is better than getting it right.
No, I love that point. And especially getting that feedback from a client during the process, not waiting until the very end and then presenting it to them. And then the client's like, no, this is the opposite of what we wanted. Or we've seen this before. This is why we came to you guys for something new.
Yeah.
You sort of asked us about this. And that fine tuning through the process within your teams and then with the client as well, I think is a beautiful, beautiful strategy to have. Now, Brett, let's talk about environments a little bit. You've worked in radio, TV, music, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, all different and dynamic environments through over the years. What key lessons do you still hold on to from those early days, those middle days, and those days right now that are kind of informing how you running Big Brave?
Yeah, you list all those things. It's definitely a sign of my curiosity in action. It is literally just that, oh, what's around that corner? Hey, that's interesting. Let's see how we can do this. I did a BCom marketing degree and I spent 10 years doing everything other than marketing in my career because I was curious and I ended up in radio and television. I ended up doing sound engineering at concerts and clubs and I could learn so much about it. And there are great analogies that I can pull from the broadcast world. The amazing thing about TV time is that it is really down to a frame. It's down to a 25th of a second. Or a 50th of a second. Like we are striving for high performance, high fidelity. And that knowledge of how that industry ticks means the technology is so precise. It's broadcast level precision. And then you've got to get things. If you've got the 8 o'clock news, everything counts backwards. Everything counts backwards, but it will happen. At 8 o'clock, the news will happen. So at 7:59, the news hasn't started yet. At 7:59 and 30 seconds, it still hasn't started. You've got a 30-second counter. I've had experience in my life where I've run a tape. I'm old enough to know what tapes were. And we took a tape from the editing suite and threw it into the VT for the broadcast thing so that while the reporter, the anchor is saying the news piece, we're loading the tape and teeing it up and getting ready for the thing. Like that pressure in my early stage of my career, it either desensitized me or it really toughened me up. It was like, listen, time is the thing. Time is our greatest valuable resource. And if you can manage your time so effectively, that's great. And those environments really did teach me timing. I like to call myself a drummer. I haven't been behind a kit for a while, but the idea of music, again, that syncopation of music, that being on time, if the drummer is setting the beat and the guitarist is doing his own thing and the vocalist is singing the words to a completely different song, it sounds like a mess. And that, for me, started showing how synchronicity of time, but also the collaboration and valuable involvement and contribution from everybody actually adds to a really nice harmonious sound. So there's lots of learnings that I took away from it. And it is weird when people meet me because I know quite a lot. And I was quite young when I kicked off my career and I got to travel a lot. And I think travel is a wonderful thing. If you are young enough now, even if you're old enough now, start traveling. Traveling will broaden your horizon. You start to meet new cultures. You start to meet new ways of doing things. Just that understanding of seeing the way of working, the way of living, and how people treat each other, that alone will start putting you in good stead for anything that you do in the future. And I think carrying that forward into business is great. The idea of working throughout Africa where people don't always understand you, and I talk very quickly. Like I have forced in situations, in environments, where I have to slow down. Because you just have to slow down. And I have to remind myself, that is an active thing that I have to do. But being aware of my shortfalls and being aware of some of the things that I need to adapt in me to meet the needs of the environment, that is super critical. And I think that's what defines really good management and leaders as well. I'm not blowing my own trumpet here, but I think when I've met really good leaders and really good managers, they're so good at adapting themselves to meet the environment needs. And that's critical. It really is, because that becomes the nature of context.
No, 100%, Brett. I like what you said there about adapting to the environment. I think too often we want to disregard the environment and say, well, I'm here. This is the way I do things. Bugger everybody else. I'm just going to run
like the show.
Yeah, exactly. So, Talking about the environment and the environment that we find ourselves here in 2025, AI and automation is reshaping industries from A to Z. There's just no two ways about it. There's no denying it now. The impact is there. How do we see the role of human-centered environments moving forward now? Because the role of connecting with humans is going to become even more valuable.
I love AI. I'm still trying to understand it. It allows us to experience more human things when we are able to overcome mundane tasks. And I don't think everybody totally gets that. I really do. I think a lot of people would have liked AI to fix our laundry at home and to clean our house before it started, you know, disrupting the creative spaces of our world. But it is what it is. And I think John Sarnai said this in one of his talks. I'm pretty sure it was John. He said if AI was a tractor, then the way we use AI today would be like the farmers trying to push their tractor. Like, it's not cheating to use AI. This technology came about. It allows you to do work a lot easier, allows you to get to an end point quicker. And you can start iterating more options rather than just the one train of thought you had. So AI is doing a wonderful thing. We use it a lot in terms of our philosophical and design thinking approaches. The idea of creating divergent options so we can have convergent choices is wonderful. Like, why have two choices when you can have five? And maybe you can validate each of them. And AI just opens up those, hey, what about? Hey, what about? So it's like kind of your, hey, what about engine. That said, there needs to be a certain amount of ethics that go into new technology and how we adopt things. If you're not sure, you have to try it. You can't knock something till you tried it. I'm a firm believer of that. Curiosity only killed the cat. There's no saying about how curiosity has killed humans yet. So be a curious human being and go and explore the things you're not sure of, AI being one of them. You're not going to break anything yet. I mean, Skynet might still rise, but that's future Brett's problem. The reality is, like, we're always going to fear the thing we don't know. So the sooner you start to know about something, the better. AI is one of those things. And you might just find that you unlock a new tool set that opens up a huge potential opportunity for you that you've never, ever explored in your life before. And that's kind of what I like about not just AI specifically now, but like any technology. In any industry, farmers, when the tractors were involved, great. Now we can yield more crops. We can go and we can farm more, or we can farm the same quicker. So it's either efficiency or quantity or scale. So you need to decide for yourself when you're using a tool, are you aiming for optimized efficiency, or are you going for the opportunity of scalable and stable? Because I don't think right now new technology always offers scale and stability at the same time. So if you are looking for those things, see where you are in this gamut of existence. Like, are you just trying to optimize your current day-to-day? If you are, check out AI. It'll certainly help you with that. If you're trying to move the needle of this thing that people have never seen before, if you're trying to innovate, you still have to start with curiosity and you still have to get to know what it is. But then it gives that tool exists. Go for it. Go for it. We'll stand on your shoulders and call ourselves giants. That's brilliant. But it takes curious and brave people to go and take the first step sometimes.
No, excellent, yeah. Brett. I love that answer. I think we just need to we need to find that right balance, and we need to find that right level of trusting the machines and trusting ourselves. Because, I mean, we've designed them. We've come up with the technology. Yes, maybe the technology is running ahead of us, and that's a scary place to be. But we mustn't let go of what makes us human. And I think that's also what John Sarnai said in his talk. Don't let go of that. Don't outsource that to any machine. Don't just abandon that. We're human for a reason. We've still got better eyesight than any camera on earth. We've still got better hearing. We've still got better intuition. We've still got better feelings and understanding things and connecting with each other. So let's use it wisely.
That's right.
Now, Brett, we almost at the end of our chat this morning. I just wanted to know, what would you say is maybe your best advice to a business owner or founder who is facing a big, brave decision that they need to make? What should they be looking for, and what should they be ignoring?
So we actually meet quite a few of these clients. We've attracted them over the years with a name called Big Brave. There's no such thing as a silver bullet. There's no one with a cape crusader is going to come and save you. If you're an entrepreneur or a business leader and you're facing some tough, challenging times where you have to really, you really have to like get your bravery in check, you have to like muster yourself. I start by saying to people, it's too big sometimes. Sometimes we take on the broader picture. We take on the biggest thing. We're like, oh, it's so big and it's so vast. And like, I don't even know where to start. So what I offer, the advice I give to business owners in that space and leaders, pick five things. Pick five things. And my mentor told me this. Pick five things that you can do in the next 5 days. Do those. Pick them. Pick the five things that you think the amount of effort will give you the amount of impact required. Pick those five things. Keep it focused. Keep it here. Don't get daunted by the overwhelming scale of the possible problems. And if you really pay attention to the things that are your five, once you've created your list, you prioritize them in the list and you start to knock them off, you might find that some of the downstream problems you thought you had were just an effect of this cause. So by solving this one really key thing, you've actually solved the downstream problems all the way around. And all of a sudden, the elephant doesn't seem as big because you were eating it one bite at a time. And that's the best approach as well. I think we allow ourselves to get daunted. So check yourself before you wreck yourself kind of would be the t-shirt. But the idea there would be just chill. You're okay. How are you doing? Do I need sleep? Do I need something? Because if you aren't filled up, you can't do anything. I mean, try drive from Joburg to Cape Town with a car with no fuel. Try. So fill yourself up and then start attacking these problems. But when you attack the problems, drive to Bloem, drive to Bethlehem, drive to Beaufort West, drive to, you know what I mean? So break it up. And that's a great tool called abstraction, where you say, this is the big scheme of what I'm after. Here's how I break it up into smaller things. And if you do those five things, you'll see how that works. And it creates this moment of movement, this moment of movement where you start to get more and more cadence and more inertia behind the decisions you're making. You get better at making decisions. You get better at solving the problems. And the five things will just be five things this week, five things next week. And maybe you'll do the five things in 2 days. That's great. What's the next five things?
No, I love that.
That would be the advice.
No, I love that answer. I think it was Alex Hormizi or Sohil Bloem that said, if you're not in the right frame of mind and struggling to make a decision, then check in with yourself. Am I sleeping correctly? Am I spending time with my loved ones? Did I go for a run? Did I play a game of paddle? When last did I eat properly? When last did I read a book? And if you can't tick some of those boxes, I think then you're not yourself. You're out of your comfort zone. And anything that comes along the path is going to disrupt you. It's going to overwhelm you. It's going to throw you for a curveball. And then you're going to be in panic stations. Whereas go back to like first principles, get your home life sorted, your personal life sorted. And that's going to put you in a better frame of mind to say, okay, what's actually going on here? What's the bigger picture? How best can I approach this? And then you start with those small decisions. Take those five things. Okay. And then you get into that momentum, I think, of making these key decisions or these enhancements along the way. And that's how you end up eating the elephant.
Yeah, absolutely. I think structure provides a great foundation for bravery. So if you can just structure your life, if you can just structure your work life, your home life, what are the 100 hours this month? Give yourself 100 hours. It's easy to count. It's nice and divisible in percentage base. What are the 100 hours? What am I going to do this month? And just break it down. I've got 100 hours for this. Of the 100 hours, there's 20 hours. This is what I work on. And it really becomes quite tangible when you start seeing, well, what can I do? If I could do what you would usually do in 160 hours, if I could do the same thing in 80, does it make it more valuable? Is my output more valuable, or is the time that I have left more valuable? And that starts to change a whole bunch of questions. But structure will only help you get those questions right. So that's why I say five things, 5 days. It's always the deliverable objective of doing anything. That's what I believe DO stands for, is deliverable objective, is what do you need by when? And then impact, effort, scale. And that is immediately a layer of structure that helps anybody get the ducks in a row.
Excellent, Brett. Now, Brett, here in 2025, we're in February now. So New Year's resolutions have come and gone. Are you in your right place?
I'm enjoying 2025. I think it's fantastic. I don't personally prescribe to New Year's resolutions. I like my long-term vision goals and stuff. So I just make sure that keeps happening. I do think that 2025 is got this huge potential for opportunity this year. And while there are a certain amount of industries that are maybe feeling a bit of the pinch, there is the hangover from the pandemic it seems to be over, at least where I'm at. So in the sort of broadcast and media industries, in the sort of big movement market engagement spaces, and some of the consumer facing things that we're doing, and in some of the fintech spaces, there's some nice movement, even in some of the charitable donation, the Section 18, Section 21, NPOs, NGOs, there's some great movement, more movement now than we've seen in maybe 4 years. So I'm hugely optimistic. I say that, but there's still Donald Trump and Elon Musk saying whatever they say on any given Tuesday in the States. And then we've got, you know, Uncle Cyril saying whatever he wants to say. And I think the best thing is to, it's going to happen. Let's control what we control. Let's find peace in the moments of the things that we can't control. If we're going to be so busy worrying about the outside external forces of international politics and global economies, you're gonna stress yourself into an early grave this year. And that's not ideal for you, for your family, for your teams. I'm personally optimistic. I hope more people can be optimistic about it. I can see that some budget is opening up. I can see that some local economy is picking up. I see that the Gears through the tough times, South Africans, we always rally in a tough time, right? And I think we've rallied for 4 years. And I think this is us now. This is us, the combination of the solidarity and the rallying around. We've got the opportunity to actually do something about it now. And that's super exciting. So I think hugely optimistic about the year. I really want to push structure in front of me. I want to have structure for how I do my interactions. I want to have meaning, which speaks to intentional strategy. Why do I want to do that? Not can I do it? Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Do I want to do it? Would I like to do that? And I think more people asking that question will mean that they will start to have more meaningful existences. They will start to get more fulfillment out of the things that they choose to do. Their effort and the impact will start to pay off. And that's what I think 2025 for me and February feels like. I mean, maybe we'll do this again in November and see how it pans out. But at the moment, I think 2025 feels really, really good. Family life, everything is looking good as well. And I wish everybody that's listening, all your listeners and yourself, John, I think 2025, man, let's go grab it. Be brave. Be brave in 2025.
I love that, Brett. I love that. I've got some big, brave, hairy, audacious goals. And it's exciting. I mean, this is a year to make something happen. I think it was, I can't remember if it was on a podcast or in a book. You must throw out your 5 or 10 year plan. Why can't you do it this year? Why can't 2025 be the year that you get this stuff done? You've had this thing on your to-do list for a while. You've had this idea. You've had this business product idea. Why can't it be done this year? And the opportunities are there for the taking. Brett, this has been such a fascinating discussion. Thank you for sharing more of your story and your business insight with us. If people want to learn more, what is the best way to get in contact with you?
I love LinkedIn. I live on LinkedIn. I am often doing articles and posts, and I'm commenting and liking things. And that has been, I think I was one of the first people in South Africa to ever be on LinkedIn. So I'm like one of these super users on LinkedIn. So if you need to find me, LinkedIn is the best. It's linkedin.com, Brett Lindsay. I seem to be the only one for the time being that you'll find. So find me on LinkedIn, connect, follow, we'll meet up. It's a great place to connect when you can't be in the same place.
Excellent, Brett. Ladies and gentlemen, please connect with Brett Lindsay on LinkedIn. Please also check out Podcast Party and the Story of Business podcast that Brett hosts. It's a wonderful podcast and really interesting conversations there, some really interesting questions as well. Please remember to subscribe to the Right Place podcast as well. Please share this episode with your connections, especially those that need a boost in bravery in 2025. Brett, any last words from you?
Be curious. It has stood me in good stead being curious. So I would love everybody to strive to use the curiosity to explore, to better understand things. And I will leave you with my mantra for life, which is if we understand and explore what makes and how we live, love, learn, and earn in our society, those are the easiest things. If you're not sure what to do, be curious around how you live. Be curious about how you love. Be curious about how you learn. Be curious about how you earn. And all of those curiosities in those areas will unlock new opportunities for you this year. So be curious.
I love that, Brett. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Brett from Big Brave. Please connect with him. Thank you all, and we'll see you next time at the right place.